What's up, everyone? By now, you know we have partnered with the great people from Cut, the social betting platform. Cut is a peer-to-peer betting platform that allows you to bet directly against all your buds and all the other Canes fans out there. That's right. You can join us on the Real Ones Canes podcast, a.k.a. Believe Miami, on Cut today and bet directly against me, against Brandon, against anybody on your favorite sports, entertainment, pop culture, politics, whatever you want. Cut makes it so easy. Cut is the ultimate put your money where your mouth is platform, and it's legal right here in Florida and probably where you are too. Be sure to follow at Cut Bet on all your social media channels and download the app via the App Store or at cut.com. Use code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, Miami. That's BELIEVE Miami for a 10% deposit bonus. It's Cut, and it's freaking awesome. Everyone, and welcome to the Real One Canes podcast. I'm the Beast Brian London. He is Brandon O'Doy. Go follow us on all the socials. Go follow Brandon at Brandon underscore O'Doy. You can follow me at Miami Radio Beast. Hey, if you're watching this on the YouTube, go subscribe to the audio podcast wherever you get your podcast. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, all those places. Go subscribe. It's fun. It's a fun thing to listen to, you know, on your drive to work or home or wherever you're going. Brandon, we got to jump in, man. There's a lot going on. We're working towards the spring game, but the transfer portal is about to open again, and we know another name that will be in it for the University of Miami. Defensive lineman Nigelie Kelly is on the way out. Was this surprising to you?
No, it wasn't surprising at all. Remember, I talked about this last week because you asked me to talk about the future with him. And I said, there is no future with this kid, that he will not be on this roster. Now, I expected him to make it a little bit further than he did. But when I started getting calls from other people at other colleges asking me about Nigelie Kelly, I pretty much knew he was shopping his name around. And so I knew he was not going to be on this Hurricanes 2024 roster. But it's not that big of a loss for the University of Miami, as it's being painted in the media, especially by some prominent journalists. And I'm not one to knock anybody for their reporting and what it is that they found out through sources, but this is a fact and this is not speculation. Nigelie was not a program guy. He got injured and did not take his rehabilitation seriously. He was not the kind of guy that the coaches wanted him to be as far as attending meetings on time, you know, just interactions in the locker room and off campus and doing some of the things. Not to say he's not a good player, but he didn't have the professionalism that Mario Cristobal and his staff wanted him to have. And as a result, when, you know, numbers are getting thick at your position, when you're injured and not able to produce, and you start becoming a little bit of a distraction in the locker room and in the facility, your name's going to be on the chopping block, and his name came up. And so he realized there wasn't a big future for him here. You got a lot of talented players that have come in this, you know, recruiting class that's walking into Miami. Some are already present, and they're just too many bodies and too much potential. And they just feel real comfortable, you know, letting a very talented kid like Nigelie, you know, walk out the door. You look back at some of the highlights that have been posted on Instagram and social media of his freshman year when he wore 32, he had some moments and he shined. And he's a four-star, you know, coming out of high school, and rightfully so. But the thing with college football is you've got to be mature. And now that they are, you know, compensating athletes for their name, image, and likeness, you know, there's a much ready, you know, premonition to move on from guys that may be not living up to their fullest potential. And sometimes it's not even on the field. Sometimes it has to do with things that you're doing off the field. And one thing I can tell you, Beast, from my time in college football and getting to know, when you are injured, you have got to put your whole heart into getting back on that field. And that's why, and if you don't do it, coaches, it rubs them the wrong way.
You know, it's kind of a shame. I remember talking to Lance Guidry at the beginning of last season. And one of the players he just kept gloating about like looking forward to coaching and helping to improve was Nigel E. Kelly, and then he got hurt. So we never really got to see that. But, you know, this happens in college football. And, you know, you pointed out, you know, there was an article about the guys that have, you know, been recruited by Mario Cristobal and transferred out. And, you know, what a big loss for the University of Miami. You know, how many guys, I can count the number of guys, and this is over 25 years, that have transferred out of the University of Miami. I can count them on one hand who've gone to another place and had outstanding, like really living up to the bill careers. It usually doesn't happen.
Yeah. Now, right now, I think the biggest loss as far as transfers in this, you know, short, you know, transfer portal season where, you know, guys leave Miami and they go on to other places, Elijah Roberts and to some extent, Romello Brinson are probably two guys that you wish you could probably have back. Well, at the end of the day,
what about Colby Young?
Well, we haven't seen what he does at Georgia yet.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I mean? But he's definitely one to watch on that list. And he's somebody that I don't think if you're Miami, you're sitting around thinking like, man, we're sure glad we lost Colby. No. You know, and to directly, you know, address Barry Jackson and his headlines, these three guys, Nigel E. Kelly, Cyrus Moss, Jahlil Skinner, they're not losses for the University of Miami. Najalik has basically already been replaced. Skinner never made an impact at all. And by all accounts inside the program, he just was not meeting the mark. And I don't want to, you know, downgrade kids, so I won't go into it, but he was not checking the boxes. Cyrus Moss never got over 250 pounds talking about playing defensive end. He was completely overrated and overevaluated in the process as far as a recruit is concerned. I don't know how he got to be a five-star kid out of California. So at the end of the day, I don't expect Miami to miss any of that talent. I don't think you wanted to lose a Henry Parrish. That's not the greatest loss, but you can survive it. And I think there's more losses to come when it comes to that running back room because, as I was telling you offline, Beast, there's about a dozen or so guys that Miami's looking to replace and to get better. And there are going to be some guys who haven't produced and guys who have been on this roster a while and have been given an opportunity and haven't done much with it that are going to be shown the door. And that is the reality of this new transfer portal world. And this window opens up on Monday, April the 15th. So you're just under a week away from chaos in college football. And expect from now into next Monday a lot of announcements, possibly even after the recording of this show, to come where kids are really sitting down with coaches and realizing, man, I don't have a home here.
The running back situation is an interesting one. You talk about losing Henry Parrish. I really like that kid. I think he had a lot of grit and just gave it his all every time he got the opportunity. I love kids like that. You know, he decided to take his talents elsewhere. But, you know, we're counting on Mark Fletcher to be RB1. He's coming back from an injury. There's no surety in that. You know, all of the national publications are really talking about Miami having to go out there and get a number one running back. Do you see that as the case?
I don't think you have to go out and get a running back that's maybe a number one. I don't think you have the budget for that. I mean, you're paying top flight money for a quarterback. You're taking care of a backup quarterback. You're taking care of lots of freshmen, and I'm not trying to count the pockets of, you know, the University of Miami and the collective, but I think you can build with where you are. You got pretty good depth, and, you know, you got Jordan Lyle coming in, Mark Fletcher coming back from injury. You got, you know, CJ, who's going to be a guy that provides some depth, Allen, who provides some depth. We don't know about the health of Fletcher or Allen. And then you got Trevante Citizen. So I think you need, and then don't, you know, you got Jordan Lyle, and I'm not sure whether I mentioned him or not, but see, if Lyle does what Fletcher did last year, I think if you're the Hurricanes, you don't have any problems. I think you go out and get a veteran for insurance, but I'm not sure you need to break the bank like this kid from Oregon State went into the portal, and there's all this conversation about going and get this guy. You don't need a guy like that. You don't need a number one, you know, running back type talent. I don't think this Hurricane roster needs that. Now, I don't know what I don't know. So if Mark Fletcher is really not ready to contribute at all, then yes, you do need a very capable person, because Jordan Lyle is only going to be a freshman. And the reason they could feel comfortable with the room last year is because they had Henry Parrish. I think you want a guy who's carried the ball and getting some snaps, but that's a guy that actually can come from FCS or the lower levels of D1. I don't think you have to break the bank and go get a Power 5, you know, aficionado and a kid to come in and you know, he was a 1,000-yard back. I don't think that's necessary. But that's just me.
That the kid you're talking about is Damian Martinez, who's entered the portal out there from Oregon State. He's a great running back, and you know, I'd love to have him on the roster. But you know, these things, there's more to it these days than just recruiting, as you talked about the budget that is involved in the transfer portal.
Yeah, you got Chris Reedley Humphrey, who's already on campus. Lyle will join him. Fletcher's who's recuperating. Allen, who's recuperating. CJ, who's on the roster, and Citizen. Citizen, I think, is the odd man out. I don't think you'll see him after the spring. I think he'll be shown the door because he's just not able to really contribute here. And so at the end of the day, I'll be watching. If he makes it to the spring game, I'll be watching kind of what he brings to the table. And if he doesn't look like a guy who can contribute this year, you know, that window will still be open. Get 15 days from the 15th, and I can expect him as being one of the guys that's out. But Beast, you know, let's look at this, you know, sensibly. The focus is on defense with this team. Offensively, they should have enough. I think if you get a veteran wide receiver and maybe even a possession guy, I think you're good to go. Like if you bring in like a guy like a KJ that they had several years ago that came in from Buffalo, you bring in, you know, something in the, you know, in that like a Rambo type of kid, you know, just to get you some, you know, third downs and, you know, has a little bit of size, 6 foot plus, you know, I think that's all this team needs. And because I'm telling you, you cannot be searching for a number one receiver right now because they do not exist. I've got Florida calling me for number ones. I've got Auburn calling me for number ones. And, you know, it's just too many people out there with needs, and everybody's not going to be able to meet these needs in the portal. And I'm telling you, the money is going to be exorbitant, and the budget has to be watched. And I'm not an NFL reporter, but I feel like one because we're talking about, you know, salary caps, budgets and numbers and all these other things. And, you know, sometimes you just have to let the guys that you have on the roster go out and be who you thought they were when you recruited them.
So, okay, that's kind of well, let's stay on the offense for 1 second, because when it involves the transfer portal, we got to look at the quarterback room, because there might be a guy that's there now that may not be a week from now.
Yeah, okay, so I expect let's just talk about it on offense. I expect Ja'Cory Brown to leave, and the staff, I've been told by some sources, are expecting him to walk out of the door. I think Citizen at running back. Okay. It wouldn't surprise me if I don't think you're gonna have an issue with any of the tight ends. I think somebody on that offensive line, like one of those sort of over recruited guys that maybe came for Columbus a couple of cycles back, wouldn't surprise me if any of those guys kind of gets out of there. They're not really gonna be a part of the future here, especially taking that junior college kid, and you know, some other depth with Samson Oklahoma. He's coming back. I mispronounced his last name, but you know who I'm talking about, the talented freshman. And he was, you know, injured at the beginning of last season. So I think somebody on the offensive line, quarterback, running back, receiver wise, I don't know if you lose anyone. You might lose some depth. And I think that's your offense as far as looking into the portal. And I think you're going to want to pick up a veteran wide receiver and possibly a stabilizing force at running back. And outside of that, I don't think you need to move in any directions at all. And at quarterback, that's going to leave you four scholarship guys, and that's what you should have. Because right now you have five, and you can't go into the season with that many. That's too many scholarships. Miami was already 8 over, so there's going to be some movement. Hurricane fans need to stabilize themselves and realize a lot of people are going to be moving in and out over the next month. That's just a fact of life.
looking at defense, they definitely need to make some additions there. There's no doubt about it. I mean, listen, they have to get to a certain scholarship number. That's why there's going to be probably about a dozen guys that are leaving. But there's guys that have to come in on that defensive side. There's no doubt about it. They are shopping.
Yeah, they're shopping. It's got to be at corner and safety. Those are the two concerns. And then also linebacker, because I guess all the depth that they took in, you know, the last couple of cycles, some of it's not developing at the race. And the problem with it not being able to see practice is you cannot see, you know, how guys are coming along that were, you know, highly regarded in the recruiting ranks. And so when you start talking about, you know, Miami wanting to go out and get people at certain positions, it's kind of like, well, what about this guy that you guys recruited? You just recruited three linebackers. So you mean to tell me none of these guys are able to step in and provide depth for you? So, yeah, that's kind of like an issue there. I think maybe a Jadeus Richard or somebody in that, you know, sort of circle who was a portal kind of reach from Vanderbilt, didn't really do a lot there, comes down to Miami. Like, these guys are going to be shown the door. These guys are sort of the names that you're going to start seeing cycle out. You know, guys you don't really hear a whole lot from. You don't see these guys being shown the door, because 12 doesn't represent the number of scholarships they, you know, have to replace, or they're over. They're over in the 8 range of scholarships, but 12 represents the number of shuffling they want to do. So 12 guys out, 12 guys in. You get what I'm saying? And then there's 8 over. So there's going to be a lot of movement. You're talking about in the neighborhood of about 20 players that are kind of moving around or moving out. And, you know, there's a lot of flurry. That's why you want to talk about, you know, spring breakdowns and positions. Listen, let's get to August and we'll start dealing with that, because we don't even know who's going to be on this team.
Yeah. So, you know, we get to the spring game, right? And we're watching the spring game, and, oh, this guy looked okay, and he looks like he's an up and coming, and blah, blah, blah. He may not be on the roster by the time the stats are printed from the spring game.
It happened at Colorado last year. The guy had an amazing, you know, spring game. And as soon as he got all the publicity, the next day he jumps right in the portal.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then there's defensive back that they need to get some depth there, I think, as well. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. Man, I wish I could be a fly on the wall to see how Mario and his staff kind of how they do this, how they attack the portal, what their evaluation is, how they fill their holes. It's almost like NFL free agency more so than it is recruiting in college football. It's a totally different game.
Well, I can tell you, they've had more hits than misses, and they're pretty good. And in Mario, we trust. But this job won't be easy, and need to prevent any more Kobe Youngs from walking out of the door. I think that one hurt. I don't like the Elijah Roberts one. He goes to SMU. He's a 10-sack guy, and now you got depth issues at the D-tackle position. There may be another things going on. That one didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, letting him walk. And I don't even like the Jafar Haffey. I don't even like letting him walk. You know what I mean? And I don't know whether that was mutual or whether Haffey wanted more money. I don't know what it was, but that kid played well last year. He's going to be missed, and he's got to be replaced. And don't forget, you still got to replace the Tecori Couch position in the slot. That position, he's held that position down since his sophomore year. I cannot underscore, unless you're going to change your defense, play with three linebackers, which I don't think you do, because you're already complaining about linebacker depth. You got to go find somebody to fill that spot. So that's the one thing I'm watching, even more so than the guys on the outside, because I like the starters. You know, I like, you know, the young freshman kid from American Heritage on one side, and I like Daryl Porter. They're both from American Heritage. But Brown, I like Brown and Porter on the sides. I don't like any depth behind them, but I like them at the starters. I want to know who that nickel's going to be, and I want to know who those safeties are going to be.
Yeah, a lot of questions that will be answered hopefully in the next week or so, and then we start talking about how that all fits together. All right, we're going to take a break. On the other side, I'm going to sit down with Michelle Kaufman from the Miami Herald. and we're going to talk about the Canes women's basketball program. And then Brandon's going to be in the waiting room kind of watching that one. And when we get back after Michelle, Brandon and I will talk about what Michelle had to say about Katie Meyer stepping down and Trisha Cullop being the new University of Miami women's basketball coach. That and more is coming your way after this. It's the Real Ones Canes podcast. The Real Ones Canes podcast. I'm the Beast Brian London. Brandon O'Doy will be back next segment. Meanwhile, we have to talk about some Miami Hurricanes women's basketball. A monumental change in the program as the winningest coach in University of Miami women's basketball history, Katie Meyer, has decided to step aside. The University of Miami has decided to hire Trisha Cullop from Toledo. And to talk about that, we bring on the outstanding intrepid reporter from the Miami Herald, Michelle Kaufman. And Michelle, before we get to Trisha, let's just talk about Katie Meyer. Words really can't express how great she was for the University of Miami over her tenure. Just outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, she's just she's really a legend at the university. And I was surprised, to be quite honest. You know, she had few more years left on her contract. You know, she's not that old, 56. I think of that as very young now that I'm 59. Or is she 54? She's 54, 56. Anyway, she's younger than me. So I think anyone younger than me is very, very young. So, you know, I was a little bit surprised. The game has changed a lot. You know, sports in general, college sports has changed a lot. And, you know, the transfer portal, NIL and those sorts of things, but the transfer portal really were, it's just a revolving door. Players are coming in, they're going out, they're coming for 1 year and then they leave and they go to another place. And they, you know, a lot of athletes now you see in college sports, especially in basketball, they're playing for 3-4 teams during their career, you know, one each year. You know, Katie Meyer, she didn't say that that's why she was leaving, but she did mention that, you know, her secret sauce, as she called it, her secret sauce for all these years is relationships. You know, her MO, and Coach L is the same way, to be honest, is, you know, see a kid at 13 years old, they catch your attention, you start to follow them, you get to know them a little bit in high school, you get to meet their families, you get to know what kind of person they are, then you recruit them. You persuade them to come to your university. They very proudly wear the U on their shirt, which is the shirt that you proudly wear, and you become a family and you fight together and you develop that player from the freshman year for the next few years. And you then you see the finished product. You know, that is the way that coaches used to be. That is the way coaches of a certain age still are. And the game has changed a lot. And so the coaches have to, you know, I talked to Coach L about Katie's departure and he said, you know, that he also has, everyone's always asking him, you know, when are you going to stop? When do you think you're too old? Has the game passed you by? The recruiting, the NIL, the transfer portal, all these things. And he said, look, you know, he's talked to friends and colleagues and they all say the same thing. Like the game is very different. It's not what it was. You either have to adapt and like jump in and start doing it the way they do it now, or you kind of have to get out. It's very difficult to still do it the way you used to do it. And I feel that in my business too, by the way. I feel the same thing in my business. So, you know, times change. I think Katie, you know, Katie's a very intelligent person. She has things going on, you know, outside of she's always been, you know, a person who has a lot of interest. She loves basketball. She's an obsessive coach. And I really can't picture her not coaching. I can't picture Katie Meyer not coaching basketball, but she's going to stay at the university. She's going to remain there as a special advisor, as an ambassador type of thing. And that's good because the university needs her. She's an incredible leader. She's a real voice for women's athletics in general, but athletics and, you know, athletics in general and women's athletics specifically. I think it's great that she's staying at the school. But we're going to miss her.
So Michelle, the good thing for those of us that love Katie Meyer, she's still going to be around the Coral Gables. Do we have an idea of what kind of impact she can make.
Yeah, I think it's great that she's staying. I mean, it's sad that she's leaving coaching because I think she's an amazing coach. She really impacted athletes on the court and off the court. So I know that the players are going to miss her. Fans are going to miss her. The media will miss her. She is one of the best quotes in all of sports that I've covered in 37 years. I mean, you always knew. I never wrote my game stories until I went to the press conference with Katie, because whatever I was going to write, I would go to the press conference and then she would tell some anecdote, or she would tell an angle, or she would tell something that happened in the locker room, and I would change what I was writing. So as a writer, as a journalist, I'm really going to miss her. She's going to stay at the university as a special advisor, as sort of an ambassador, special advisor. And I think she will still have a huge impact because she's a great leader. She's very interested in making sure that the transition to this new landscape of college athletics, she wants to have an impact on that, because right now it's a little bit of the wild, wild west. Let's face it. It's just a little bit crazy out there. 2,000 people in the portal, coaches are just running around like with their chickens with the heads cut off, trying to recruit people that they've never met before. It's a very different world. And she wants to help navigate that. She wants to help the University of Miami, a place that she absolutely still loves. She wants to help this university navigate those changes. And I think she's the perfect person to do that. She's also going to help with fundraising. She's going to always be an advocate for women's athletics, for athletics in general, but specifically women's athletics, to make sure. And now, more than ever, I mean, I'm doing this interview in the week when, for the first time in history, I never in my life thought that I would see the women's NCAA championship outdraw the men's by 4 million. The men's final drew 14.8 million and the women's final drew 18.9 million. It's the first time in history that the women's NCAA final outdraws the men. And, it's college sports and women's athletics right now is at a real, it's at a tipping point. There's a lot of things going on, a lot of changes, a lot of things happening, a lot of perceptions are changing about women's athletics. And yes, Caitlin Clark, we're going to talk about that in the context of the new coach, Tricia Cullip. But this is a really, really important time right now, today, this week, this month, this year, for colleges to capitalize on what's happening with women's basketball during this tournament and this rise in interest because of Caitlin Clark and the rivalries with LSU and South Carolina and all that. And I think Katie is going to put herself in a perfect position to be a leader, not just at UM, but maybe in the ACC, college-wide, NCAA-wide. She's a kind of person who is just so intelligent, was an academic all everything when she was at Duke, super smart person. She can do more than coach. I mean, I know she's a great coach, but I think as a leader, she can do more than coach. And just last night, Tara Vanderveer retired from Stanford after 39 years, another incredible leader in women's athletics. And she's also going to stay on at Stanford as a special advisor, ambassador type person. So I think we're seeing a time when maybe some women who have been coaching for a long time may go into administration and try to help navigate the waters right now, because we're at a position, we're at a time when women's athletics can start making money, can start generating audience. It's not just like a charity thing, like, oh, yay, women are playing sports. We have to have a women's team because we have a men's team. We've evolved from that. And there's good and bad in that. There's good and bad. It was very cute and wonderful and warm and fuzzy the way it was before. Now, women's athletics is diving into the dirt and the crap that the men's sports have to deal with, which is NIL, transfer portals, selfish athletes who just want, people who just want for themselves, me, me, me. They don't want to be developed. They want to turn pro right away. All of those attitudes that the male athletes have had, the female athletes are starting to get some of those same attitudes. And it's good and it's bad. But, you need some leadership to help navigate these changing times. And I think Katie is going to be a perfect leader for the United States, for the United States of America too, but that's another story. For the University of Miami, you see where my mind is. You know, I think she'll be a great leader for the University of Miami as we enter this sort of new era of college athletics and women's athletics.
So let's get to Tricia Cullip. She comes in after spending a long time at Toledo. Unbelievable job she's done there with that program. But why was she the right choice for the University of Miami?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people may look at it and say, Toledo, you know, Miami's not Toledo. Yes, she did great in Toledo, but Miami's not Toledo and the MAC is not the ACC and all these sorts of things. That is all true. However, Jim Larrañaga started in the MAC. He was at Bowling Green and then he was at George Mason. And I remember when he came here, there were some questions. Yes, he had gone to the Final Four and that was the big thing that he took George Mason to the Final Four. But he did come from a smaller program and that's where he had most of his success. And he was coming into the ACC. Katie Meyer came from a smaller program as well. I think in this case, Tricia Cullip, from everyone that I've spoken to, including Katie Meyer, who knows her well, Tricia Cullip is a leader in college women's athletics and college basketball. She has been the president of the Women's College Basketball Association. She is very, very, very well respected in her field. People in women's college basketball know who she is. She's someone who gives back a lot to women's college basketball. The other reason that she was a choice that UM was very interested in is because in addition to having a very wonderful winning record. Last year, they were 28-6. They were 15-1 at home. The year before, they won 29 games, and they upset number 5 Iowa State in the NCAA tournament. They ended up losing to number 4 Tennessee, but they did beat a number 5 seed 2 years ago in the NCAA tournament, a team that's in the MAC, a team that's Toledo. They're not going to get the recruits and the size and type of players that she may be able to recruit. She should be able to recruit in the ACC. The thing that was interesting, too, about Tricia Cullip is she's known for building a fan base. And at Toledo, yes, it's Toledo. No, it's not Miami. No, there's not as much to do in Toledo as there is in Miami. I will say all of that. However, she grew that team's attendance from the time she got there to the point where this year they drew exactly the same as the men's team. So the men's team drew 4,500 a game. The women's team drew 4,500 a game. So she is beloved in the community of Toledo, not just in women's sports, but just sports in general. Everybody in Toledo knows who she is. I'm very good friends with Christine Brennan, who used to be at the Miami Herald and then at the Washington Post. She's USA Today now on CNN. And she's from Toledo, still owns a home in Toledo. And when my story posted that they had hired Tricia, within minutes, I got a text from Christine and she was like, OMG, great hire. This is great for the U. This is great for you as a journalist. You're going to love covering her. She's absolutely wonderful. I got another text from somebody that I know from the tennis world, believe it or not, a guy who works in tennis PR, and he used to be at Xavier, and he was an SID at Xavier, and he wrote me right away and said he was an SID when she was at Xavier, and he said, absolutely great hire. Tricia Cullip's amazing. Wait till you meet her. She's going to be great. She's going to be great for you. She's going to be great for the program. So I'm hearing a lot of enthusiasm about her. We don't know her. She's from Toledo. She's from the Midwest. She's from the MAC. But that would have been the same as saying Jim Larrañaga is from Bowling Green and George Mason. You know, is he going to be a good fit? Or should they get some New York guy, you know, who everyone knows the name, to come to the ACC? Why are we getting, you know, an older guy who was at George Mason? I remember those conversations when, you know, when they hired Coach L. The other finalist was the other top finalist, from what I know from my sources, who are good sources, impeccable sources, actually, was the Florida Gulf Coast coach, Carl Smesko. He is a guy who has been at FGCU for 22 years, has an 84% winning percentage there, which is an unbelievable winning percentage. 84% of your games is higher than UConn, you know, higher than Tyra Vanderveer, higher than Gino Auriemma at UConn. That program, he built it around a sort of unique system that he had, which was basically they just threw three-pointers all the time. They led the nation in three-pointers. That was their MO. In fact, I think someone told me that if you look at the roster for Florida Gulf Coast, they don't have positions listed. It doesn't say center, forward, and guard. It just says shooter. Everybody's a shooter on that team. And they don't have size, and that's one of the reasons. They had a shorter team, and they just weren't. He would just go out and recruit great shooters. And so he's an interesting candidate, has had incredible success over there. And he was another top finalist for this job. I think at the end of the day, they had two candidates there. If those were the two top finalists, let's say, or two of the top three, let's say, you had two people with very similar records in smaller conferences in the Atlantic Sun. The other one was in the MAC. Both of them have winning records. Both of them did develop fan bases. They also have a pretty good fan base at Florida Gulf Coast. But Trisha Cullip nationwide is well known in women's college basketball as being a real leader in the sport of women's college basketball. Not just that she had a successful program, but she is very plugged in and very devoted to growing the sport of women's college basketball. And again, like I said before, you know, she's a woman. You know, that comes into it too. When you talk about two finalists, one is a man, one is a woman. Is that fair? Well, here's what I will say about that. Men, so many women's programs are coached by men, and that's fine. Gino Auriemma is a great coach. I love Gino. I've known him for a long time. A lot of women's programs are coached by men, but the deal here is that male coaches have opportunities to coach men's college basketball and women's college basketball. Female coaches, their pool of job opportunities is on the women's side. Right now, anyway, when there are men's college basketball openings, they are not considering women for those jobs. So when you look at the total pool of college basketball job openings, the men can apply to all the jobs, the men's jobs and the women's jobs. The female coaches can apply for the female jobs. The women coaches, the female coaches, Trisha Cullip is not applying for the jobs in men's college basketball, because we have not crossed that barrier yet. So the job opportunities are fewer for women. And I think if you had two equal candidates, and they really are equal in every way, those are two equal candidates, both of them fantastic coaches, both unique, both did build a fan base. I do think in this case, you go for a woman who is very dedicated to the sport of women's college basketball. And now, more than ever, as I mentioned before, we are in a position now where, you know, I was just talking about it with my daughter, who's 24. She played soccer for 14 years. She loves all sports. She had a bracket for the men's tournament. She had a bracket for the women's tournament. She plays in a fantasy football league. You know, she is really into sports. And she said to me, I just hope that these statistics and everything with Caitlin Clark and everything that happened with this tournament, I really do hope that this is a time of change. Not that every year now there's, you know, the women are going to outdraw the men and all that stuff. That's not really just the idea that there are so many female athletes and coaches who deserve to be seen, and their stories deserve to be told, and their stories deserve to be known. And the reason that people tuned in to this women's basketball tournament, yes, Caitlin Clark, a person who was doing something unique, a unique story, but also her rivalry with LSU, the rivalry with Angel Reese. Then you've got an undefeated, unbelievable team in South Carolina, which is 34-0 going into it with Dawn Staley, who's a character and a half herself, and the team that she put together and the way they play. You had storylines, you had characters, You have story arcs. You have rivalries. This is what sports is built on. Men's sports are built on the same thing. This is why we care. Why do we care about LeBron James? Why do we care about Tom Brady? Why do we care about all these people that we follow in sports? Why do we care about Tua? Because we know who they are. We know their stories. We know the hurdles they've overcome. We know the injuries that they've had. We know the rivalries. We know their backgrounds. We know everything about them. They are not just numbers running up and down a court. And for too long in women's basketball, the country was not paying attention because nobody knew who these women are. And I am telling you, there have been some kick-ass ballers playing women's basketball long before Caitlin Clark got here. She's great and she's amazing. And yes, her numbers are, you know, record-breaking. However, if anyone has ever seen Diana Taurasi play, has anyone seen Jennifer Azee? Has anyone seen, I mean, you know, you can go down the list, Lynette Woodward, you know, Cheryl Miller. There are so many good players, Dawn Staley herself, so many players who were fantastic players in women's college basketball, but no one was paying attention, or few people, a very select audience was paying attention. And now that we know who these people are and their stories, now we care when Caitlin Clark is playing against LSU because Kim Mulkey is Kim Mulkey. And we now know who Kim Mulkey is. Kim Mulkey has been in women's basketball for a long time as a successful player and as a coach. We care now because now she's had a lot of exposure on TV, and everyone knows, whether you like her, whether you hate her, whether you just want to talk about her ridiculous outfits, whatever it is, her feather boas, you know, she brought attention to the sport. Caitlin Clark brought attention to the sport. Angel Reese, Dawn Staley, South Carolina. All of a sudden now, going into next season, fans who didn't really know anything about women's college basketball are now at least know a little about it, and some of the characters and some of the coaches and some of the teams, and it's going to be more interesting. And so this time that Tricia Cullip is taking over the UM program, and yes, I am winding back to UM with my very long answer. This is a really critical time for women's basketball. And it's a critical time for Tricia Cullip as a new leader in this program to bring it, to bring the attention of the program to a new level. Katie is amazing and is an amazing coach and did everything her entire, you know, she breathed UM, she bled orange and green, she still will in her new role. This program deserves to have more fans than it does. This program deserves to have more people in that arena when they play. This is the time. This is the time to grow the audience for that program. And Tricia Cullip, from everything I'm hearing, that is going to be one of her main objectives. And we're going to have a press conference with her tomorrow. Her introductory press conference is on Thursday. And I want to talk to her about some of those things. How is she going to? This is not Toledo. This is not Toledo. This is Miami. There are a lot of distractions. We are in a very Hispanic community, which is not necessarily the most, you know, it can be a male chauvinistic society, you know, and I'm saying this as a Cuban woman myself. You know, the women's sports in Latin America are not at the level that they are in North America. So they're still breaking barriers down there that we've already broken here. And a lot of people in South Florida don't follow women's sports. So she's coming into a place that's very different from Toledo, where the LPGA event there is a really big event in golf and has been for a long time, where women's basketball does have a traditional following in the Midwest, in Iowa and in Toledo and in Indiana. This is not that. This is Coral Gables. This is Beaches. This is Wynwood. This is, we know what Miami is. How is she going to draw people to women's basketball at the University of Miami? That is going to be one of her missions. I know it is. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in this next stage of UM women's basketball.
Michelle, I could talk to you for 17 hours and it still wouldn't be enough. So thank you for your time. I know you have to get out of here. Two things. One, if I was a men's program, I might make a phone call to Don Staley, by the way. And two, we'd love to have you back sometime and continue to the discussion. Michelle, thanks so much for taking the time.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, even after, you know, once I meet Trisha and we talk to her a little bit and I see what some of her plans are, we can talk again. Because I really do think it's interesting. I mean, Katie took the team to the Elite Eight. She took the team to a level that it had never reached before on the court. And yet, the next year, it didn't have the bump in attendance and interest that it should have had, considering that they went to the Elite Eight last year. So it's a real challenge that Trisha Cullip is going to face here. I know that Katie tried. She tried really hard, and it's a tough thing to do down here. And Trisha, and so did Fern Labate before that, two great coaches. So now we're going to have Trisha Cullip, a new coach, a new face for the first time in 19 years in this program. So let's see what she brings to the table. But from everything I've heard, she's going to be a good hire. That's what I'm hearing from everybody. Time will tell.
Go follow Michelle on X at Koff Sports. Go read her stuff in the Miami Herald. She does an amazing job. One of the best reporters that's ever covered sports in this town. There's no doubt about it. Michelle Kaufman, thanks so much for taking the time. We'll be back right after this, The Real Ones Canes podcast. Back to the Real Ones Canes podcast. I'm the Beast Brian London. He is Brandon O'Doy. Go subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Brandon, you had a chance to watch me talk to Michelle Kaufman, great reporter, Miami Herald, gave me so much of her time, and I'm so thankful for that. Talking about Katie Meyer stepping down and why now, the landscape of college athletics changing, and the women's game really taking a step forward, you know, talking about the numbers that the NCAA tournament did, and, you know, 4 million more people watched the women's final than the men's final and all that stuff. It's an important time in women's college athletics, and especially at the University of Miami. Katie Meyer stepping down, Trisha Cullip being hired, and, you know, Michelle basically said, you know, listen, it came down to her and the coach at Florida Gulf Coast. And the reason why they kind of went with Trisha Cullip is, you know, it's kind of like she's a basketball coach's basketball coach, great X's and O's coach, great coach, but also likes to work on getting attendance and building a program and doing those sorts of things. Listen, you heard Michelle say, listen, it's, you know, building attendance at Toledo is not the same as trying to build attendance in Miami with all there is to do, plus the Latin population that doesn't kind of get in sports and watch college basketball and all of the all of that stuff. I still don't know. I'm still up in the air on this one.
Well, I ain't up in the air. I ain't in the air at all. I don't like the pick, and I appreciate Michelle and her insights. She's one of the persons that I took my cues from when, you know, I started Kane Insider in 2011 and was covering women's basketball. And, you know, I liked the program and the direction under Katie Meyer, and I thought, you know, she was a great coach. Thought she was a little bit younger than she was. She just carries herself so well. But, I mean, the greats and the old school guys are retiring. Tara Vanderveer from, you know, Stanford.
From Stanford,
Just stepped down a few moments before recording this. I mean, the GOATs are out of here. And you go and you grab someone from that generation, and it doesn't make any sense. Women's basketball is at the height of sports in this country, just right below, you know, NBA basketball and football, which is always on top. And you've got to get a piece of that pie. And if you're Dan Radakovich, you missed a major opportunity because you're not going to be able to fire this woman when she's an absolute disaster because she cannot connect with, you know, Miami culture, the kids who play here, the kids you can get to recruit here. When she's a disaster, what are you going to do then? And you had the opportunity to go out, grab one of these young, vibrant coaches. You pay them not a lot of money because, you know, you're giving them an opportunity to come to D1. And if they don't make it, fine. You're not building a program here. This program went to the Elite Eight just a season ago. There's nothing to build. What are you talking about? We don't need a program builder. We need a program elevator. We need someone who's going to take us from being pretty good regularly to, you know, in the national conversation with LSU and South Carolina and Duke and North Carolina State and all these elite teams. We don't need somebody who's going to hold the line. Status quo is not going to work. We want a piece of the pie. We want to be on national games, on national television. We want to pack the bank. We want to pack, you know, or whatever it's called now. We want to be relevant in this sport, and it's getting so much attention, and you missed an opportunity. And Michelle was very nice about it, and that's her. That's who she is, and I get it. But no, Dan, no, you messed up big time. And listen, I'm going to stand on this mountain until she wins a national championship. Because, I mean, outside of that, that's the only place the program can go. Because we've already been to the Elite Eight. We've already been to the mountaintop.
So if she has a great season next year, takes Miami deep into the tourney, and it looks like...
How is she going to do that, Beast? How is she going to do that? You got to have players. You got to have ballers. South Carolina is bringing their entire team back except for one person. And they went undefeated. This is going to be an unprecedented run. How is she going to get it? How can she do it? How? Show me. I would love to come over here and eat crow. Listen, I said to you last year, I said, if Tyler Van Dyke is better than I say he is, I'll personally apologize. I'll wear Tyler Van Dyke for president shirts. If Elijah Royal goes out and have 5 touchdowns, I will absolutely. But when I feel the way that I feel and I'm strong, he's already being second guessed at Wisconsin. He's already second guessing him now. Like, what did we get ourselves into exactly? Because he didn't have it then. He hasn't changed. He's a great guy. Awesome student. Great guy to go have dinner with. You know, you got to have leaders. You got to have this, you know, game changers, like Prom says. We just didn't do a good job, Dan. Shame on you, Dan. Shame on you, Dan. And the new coach is probably a fantastic person. She's probably a fantastic basketball coach. And look, that's good that she can coach. So now that you've made a mistake in the hire, I don't like the hire. I think the hire is very misguided. I think it would have been great 10 years ago. But okay, she can coach basketball. So Dan Radakovich, put your money where your mouth is. Go buy players, bring them in, and let her coach them. Because that's the only thing you can do now. Because all this program building, attendance building stuff, everybody wants to hear that. Are you going to win? Are you going to give us on national television? Can we take on South Carolina? Can we take on, you know, UConn? Can we take on Notre Dame? Can we march with the big dogs? That's what we want to know. So go pay these young girls to get them down here in Coral Gables and let them ball out of control. And if she's such a great coach, then that's fine. She can take the talent and elevate it. But if you ain't getting All-Americans, you ain't getting McDonald All-Americans, you ain't getting these elite players, then what are we talking about?
So how do you really feel? No, I'm just kidding. Brandon.
Just a missed opportunity, man. That's all.
I agree. All right, bro. We will definitely have a good one next week. I know this because the portal's going to open. It's going to be fast and furious. It is going to be crazy. Yeah, for sure. So we'll be all over it. Brandon will have the insight. Yeah. I can't wait.
Not two already. Well.
Yeah. I can't wait to my texts are going to be going crazy. I know Brandon's going to be just sending me all sorts of texts. I can't wait. All right, everybody, subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Thank you for Michelle Toppin for joining us. Brandon, thank you, my friend. We'll see you next time. It's the Real Ones Canes podcast. Peace.